for Otis. First thoughts. The Victorian upper crust excelled at taking apart dinner. Plates were flanked by as many as 16 utensils. There were special knives and forks for game and roasts and separate sets for fish and salad and fruit. But tableware only takes one so far. To reduce a mouthful of mutton or hare to what is known in oral processing parlance as the swallowable state, a certain amount of chewing must take place. For that, one needs teeth. For the multitude of Victorians who lacked them, a 17th implement was sometimes set out. Picture a pair of garden pruners with flat-toothed blades. The masticator, as it was called, allowed the edentulous dinner guest to pre-chew the offerings before lifting them to mouth. Dentures have been around since the 1700s. Who would rely on a masticator when they could opt for false teeth? In fact, people often had both. They'd masticate in the privacy of their room, then install their dentures and head into the dining room to sit down and not eat. Far from being a functional replacement for molars and incisors, false teeth at the time were largely ornamental, a sort of wig for the mouth. With uncertain adaptation to the jaws and primitive fastening arrangements, false teeth were in general almost useless for eating, wrote the late John Woodford in The Strange Story of False Teeth, a book I chewed through to hear expectorate a few morsels. At its most extreme, the unsatisfactory fastening arrangement took the form of piercings in the gums, from which a set of floating teeth were suspended on the earring principle, as Woodford noted. Moderately less cruel were spring-loaded dentures, wherein stiff wire coils united the lowers and uppers, pushing the latter against the top gums and at the same time tending to launch them forward out of the mouth. "It shoots beyond the gums and forces the lip out just under the nose," George Washington complained in one of his many letters to one of his many dentists. "His mouth was like no other I ever saw," recalled a visitor, "the lips firm and the under jaw seeming to grasp the upper with force as if the muscles were in full action when he sat still." Hence the grim set of the general's mouth in his later portraits. He was locked in battle with his teeth. The 20th century denture stayed put through a combination of suction and oral glue, or fixative, as the polygrip people prefer. Even then, dentures afforded less than a quarter of the chewing efficiency of natural teeth. Respondents to a 2015 polygrip survey confessed that their dentures limited not only their menu choices, but their love life. 24% of them were afraid to kiss someone passionately. 20% were reluctant to smile. Given all this, the truly astonishing item in that polygrip poll was that the majority of the respondents, 53%, were younger than 45 when they first got dentures, meaning that most had made the decision to have pulled their remaining healthy teeth. It called to mind something I'd heard about, matrimonial dentures, wherein a bride-to-be was given false teeth and the necessary extractions as a wedding gift to spare the couple the expense of having rotted teeth extracted one at a time over a lifetime. Likely a misguided strategy, as denture wearers had to be refitted for a new set every 5 to 10 years as the body resorbed the toothless bone below. My understanding of this practice was that it was confined to a reasonably distant past and to insular dentally underserved cultures that relied on the services of denturists, people who are not licensed to fill or clean or otherwise extend the lifespan of a tooth. That it was only brides who had it done, never grooms, has given rise to dubious denture conspiracy theories, one of course involving gum jobs, and another best related by the denture wearer herself. "All the women I know who wear dentures have trouble talking," wrote the author of a Dear Abby letter, "because the dentist intentionally made them that way so women will keep their mouths shut." So looking into the practice, I landed on a Reddit r/askhistorians thread. Someone had inquired about the practice. More than 1,000 comments followed, from people whose parents or grandparents